This interview is brought to you by ASP Isotopes. Well, good to see you again, Paul, man. It's going on for 2.5 years since we were together in our studios in Bryanston. Now we've gone fully remote. I know you travel the world as well. But subsequent to that, you've listed on NASDAQ. The share prices had a bumpy ride, but doing terribly well of late, coming from 34 cents to $5.80 at the moment. So I'm so sorry that I didn't follow you. And I think members of the BizNews tribe followed you along this journey of yours, because it has been an interesting one. But today, we've got a lot to catch up on. Maybe in the last 2.5 years, last we spoke, you were busy here in South Africa. You had a couple of plants in Pretoria. You were saying that it was with the new process that you use on isotopes, you were able to build lots of, were able to build smaller plants. I think we should probably start at the beginning and just tell people what ASP Isotopes' innovation is and what makes it so unusual relative to how, say, the Russians produce isotopes.
Yeah, so great to be back again, Alex. So yeah, so you know, we acquired two technologies, or many technologies, down here in South Africa via a business rescue process about almost 4 years ago now. And you know, we our plants are much smaller than a traditional centrifuge that Russia may use. A lot more capital efficient, we believe. It can also enrich light isotopes as well as heavy isotopes, which is a huge advantage for some of the new isotopes the world needs, like silicon 28 for quantum computing. And we can also enrich, our laser-based approach, we can also enrich solids. You can't turn into a gas. So there's many reasons why our plants are different to Russia. I wouldn't want to compete against the Russian centrifuge for doing low-enriched uranium, because there's so much of it. But for other isotopes, I think there's a lot of demand, a lot of interest, and our processes are great. Now, in South Africa, we've now built 3 manufacturing facilities here. All 3 are in the process of now doing commercial production. And we expect to ship our first product to customers, you know, in the next month or two. That'll be silicon 28 going to a large US semiconductor company, which will enable next generation semiconductors. So, you know, there's lots of things we're working on. It's been a very busy last 3.5 years, and it's great to be here.
Well, it's really good to be talking to you after we followed your process. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, this is something different. This is something new. And it is something that could really take off. When you say you've now, I suppose the big thing is executing. You are about to execute. You're about to now start delivering your first product. Who would you sell it to? Do you have any contracts that you can tell us about that you've signed?
Yeah, so for silicon 28, we've signed 2 contracts. Although we have about 5 or 6 more customers wanting to sign contracts, and we'll sign those over the next few months. So, you know, silicon 28 will enable super fast semiconductors that will enable quantum computing, artificial intelligence, that kind of stuff. And so, so we've signed a contract with a large US semiconductor company, and we've also signed a contract with a large global industrial gas company, leading supplier of electronic gases for the semiconductor industry. And you know, they'll receive our first couple of shipments. We're talking to a few governments and a few other semiconductor companies as well. And they should leave this quarter to be on the boat this quarter to go to the customer. In terms of a ytterbium 176, we haven't really signed any long term contracts for that particular one. But you know, we believe our plant could do about 1 kilogram a year, and we've identified about 2 kilos of demand. The only other supplier of ytterbium 176 is Russia. In fact, the world is in such short supply right now. It's like a 4 to 6 week wait to get onto the drug in the US, which is, you know, dreadful when end stage pancreatic or also prostate cancer. And then for carbon-14, our smallest plant, we've signed a multi-year take or pay agreement with a Canadian customer for a minimum of $2.5 million a year. And that should that's been delayed a little bit, but we're processing now. We've started commercial production now.
You explained it really well to me last time we met. Would you just explain what a silicon 28, how that is different to the normal silicon or sand?
Yeah, so silicon has 3 isotopes, 28, 29, and 30. And the 29 isotope does not conduct electricity. And so, you know, if you can remove that 29 isotope, the silicon you have increases in conductivity thousands of fold. It also transmits heat more efficiently as well. And so, you know, when you think about a silicon, which often you find on a beach and sand, you know, a kilo of silicon, normal silicon, is probably $1 a kilo. When we strip out the 29 isotope and just have pure 28, you know, it's $500,000 a kilo. So, you know, we take very basic chemicals and convert them to very special materials the world needs or have very specific applications for. Well, that's kind of what we do. It's good.
And the process of going through it is, of course, where the secret lies. Now, last time we spoke, you explained that centrifuge, in other words, spinning cylinders, is what most of the world uses, and indeed the Russians, who are the leaders in this technology by terms of volume. But you'd invented something here, or you came across the guys in South Africa who'd invented it, where it's the gas that spins and the cylinder actually is static. Has anybody else been able to replicate what you have here?
They have not. And whether they've tried to or not, I don't know, but they have not. And listen, yeah, centrifuges are great for enriching uranium, very good. But they're not very good at enriching a lot of other isotopes the world may need. And so things like silicon 28, carbon 14, chlorine 37, you know, they're really ideally suited towards our type of centrifuge. Now, we could build a centrifuge as well, like Russia has got. It's not challenging technology to build, but you know, we prefer, we like our technology for the isotopes we're enriching.
What about uranium? There was an article recently by a company, I think it's called Fuzzy Panda, which got a little bit of airtime here in South Africa, saying that you guys are not able to enrich uranium, or you're fuzzy, to use the name of their business. What exactly is going on? I did see your response to it, and perhaps you could repeat that for us here.
Yeah, so, you know, we have not enriched uranium. Our company has not enriched uranium yet. We don't have the permits to enrich uranium. But we do believe our quantum enrichment is the best way to do it. We also have ASP. We can use ASP to enrich uranium, or a normal centrifuge to enrich uranium. So actually, uranium is a fairly easy isotope to enrich. There are only two isotopes really of interest, 235 and 238, and they're a long way apart from each other. Yeah, our laser plant today is enriching ytterbium-176 to the seven isotopes of ytterbium, and we're picking out one in the middle. So ytterbium is actually a much harder isotope to enrich than uranium, and you know, we are successfully enriching ytterbium right now, today. Now, we'd like to enrich uranium in South Africa, you know, and we're talking to the government. We've signed an MOU with Nexa to build a facility up at Pelindaba, and we've signed a term sheet with Terra Power, when we get definitive agreements, we'll likely invest in the facility at Pelindaba and take a long term and guarantee a long term offtake as well. So we're working hard to get through the regulatory permitting and what have you to be able to do this. It just takes a long time in uranium.
Who are those two names that you mentioned, Nexa and Terra Power?
So Terra Power is a next generation nuclear energy company founded by Bill Gates, who is still the chairman. And their goal is to dramatically lower the cost of nuclear power and the time it takes and the cost it takes to build a nuclear reactor. The problem is all these new reactors called SMR, small modular reactors, require a new form of uranium called HALEU, high assay low-enriched uranium, and there is no Western supplier of that today. Nexa is a South African nuclear energy corporation, and they run Pelindaba, which is where South Africa did its enrichment back in the 70s and 80s, and they have the Sefale reactor at that site, a nuclear reactor on that site, and produce a lot of the world's medical isotopes, or radioactive medical isotopes, from that site. And we think it's a great combination of the two to help try and solve a global supply chain problem. So our goal is to build a huge plant here in Pelindaba, employ thousands of people, mobilize an entire domestic supply chain in South Africa, and using other people's money. And we're looking forward to doing it. I must say, we've had a great response from the government. I mean, the DEE, Department of Electricity, Minister Ramakopa, has done a great job in terms of solving a lot of the country's energy problems or short-term energy problems. And, you know, it's been nothing but, the government is nothing but supportive of what we're doing. We're very thankful for the government.
Well, how would that all work when you say, because it's a big dream and a big plan, and I'm sure for investors, they'll be hoping that it does come to fruition. But are there any milestones along that path that we can watch out for?
Yeah, so first of all, we have to get permission from the National Nuclear Regulator, the NNR, to do this. It feels like the DEE are on side. And so right now we're in the permitting and licensing phase with the NNR. Once we have that permit, we will start building a test bench. We actually built one test bench already at Pelindaba. We'll build a second test bench at Pelindaba. And we'll start going through the process, and seeing how well it works and how we do it and fine-tuning it. And then assuming it works well, we'll build a full-scale plant there.
Why would they need you? Why would TerraPower and the nuclear regulator organization, why would they want ASP Isotopes, your company, to be involved?
So from TerraPower's standpoint, if we wanted to build this plant in the United States, it would probably take 10 to 15 years just to get the permit and the license. And in the United States, you'll find that an environmentalist will find a rare bird that breeds in a tree every 10 years, and you can't build that plant there. As you find in Africa, that bird just moves to a different tree. It's really simple. And so permitting and licensing here is generally a lot more straightforward, a lot easier. Pelindaba already has, it used to enrich uranium at Pelindaba. It's well known to the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. So, you know, it's a plug-and-play location where we can go and build a facility that has all the proliferation risk already accounted for or taken care of. And also, South Africa has a lot of exceptional nuclear engineers and chemical engineers. We now employ 153 people. I think when we last spoke, we employed maybe 20. 153 people now. 20% of our employees have got PhDs. Half have got advanced degrees. And you know, you'd really struggle to find that expertise elsewhere in the world. So, you know, we're very fortunate to be here. We've got a lot to thank the South African people for and the country for.
Well, you've come a long way in the last 2.5 years since we last spoke. And now you've a couple of weeks ago, you said you're looking to list your shares, which have done well on NASDAQ, as mentioned earlier, on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. What motivated that?
You know, of our 153 employees, 149 are South African. All of our operations are in South Africa. We're actually the leading supplier of PET radioisotopes to cancer patients and sick patients in sub-Saharan Africa and South Africa. So most of our operations, you know, our balance sheet and investors may sit in the United States, but the heartbeat of our company is in South Africa. And we owe it to the South African people to be able to invest in our company and benefit from what we're doing here in South Africa. So that's the main reason why.
It sounds like you've also done quite a lot of investing in the last 2.5 years. At the time we spoke, November 2022, you were listing on NASDAQ. You were going to raise $5 million. So it wasn't really a lot. Have you been able to raise more capital in the ensuing period?
Well, we have, yeah. I mean, we've raised now $100 million US dollars since we incorporated the company in September 2021, over $100 million. And, you know, we've got about $60 million left on our balance sheet. So we spent $40 million. Unlike a lot of companies, you know, management own a lot of the equity in this company. I'm the biggest shareholder. Every dollar we spend, 10 cents of it is mine. We're very careful how we spend our money. Some people will say we're frugal. I'm fine with that word. And, you know, we don't sponsor cars and events and all that kind of stuff. We're very, very careful where we spend our money. And, you know, we've still got a lot of money left to build more plants with, you know. But yeah, we've had a lot of support from our US investors. We've got a lot of strong US investors now. We've got quite a few institutions who recognize what we're doing is important to the world. And we're thankful to them.
And you are an alternative with some of those isotopes to the Russians. Has there been any positive benefit to you of Ukraine? And where I'm going here is, if the Ukraine war were to end, would there be a negative impact on your business?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, while the war in Ukraine has been ongoing, there's been embargoes on many things from Russia. isotopes have never been embargoed. And quite frankly, they couldn't be because the world needs them and they're the only supplier. I mean, for example, most every pressure water reactor in the US, which produces about 10% of the country's electricity, requires a small amount of lithium-7 in the water to maintain the pH correctly. All of that comes from Russia. Most medical isotopes come from Russia. 45% of the world's uranium for nuclear reactors comes from Russia. So, you know, you simply can't cut out that supply chain to any country, really. So there's been attempts to try and stop these isotopes and things, but no one's really been able to do it. So if the war stops tomorrow, you know, it wouldn't really have a huge effect on the supply-demand dynamics of the isotope industry. Also, Russia has historically been quite a poor supplier of isotopes, an unreliable supplier of isotopes. And so, again, the world is looking for an alternative, more reliable supplier. And actually, the reason I got interested in this industry was because when I used to manage money at Soros and Highbridge, some of the best shorts for companies that needed isotopes because they weren't available and they missed earnings numbers. Companies like Mallinckrodt, Cardinal Health, you know. And that's how I became so aware of this industry. And when we found these assets down here, well, I was so excited to be able to try and get my hands on them.
And what are the risks to ASP Isotopes, to your company going forward, given that there are many members of the BizNews tribe who I think like the story from even back 2.5 years ago and might want to now also buy your stock when it lists here in South Africa? What are the risks they need to watch out for?
Listen, all businesses have risks attached to them. So first of all, our main competitor are governments. Governments are less capital efficient and capital aware as what companies are. You know, when a minister decides to spend, you know, $100 million on something, it's zero if it's his. So he hasn't quite got the same incentive that we do to generate returns for shareholders. So that certainly keeps me awake at night is ridiculous spending by governments to try and compete against us. I don't think that'll happen because most governments right now look pretty broke. But, you know, that's always a risk. Starting up free plants is always challenging. We've had small delays, small accelerations, that kind of stuff. It feels like we've kind of got through that stage now. Permitting for new plants takes time. No guarantee we ever get permits for new plants. So there's always lots of risks with every company. But it feels to me like, you know, it's been a tough slog these last 3 years, but it feels like we've kind of got through the worst of it now. And I would add, you know, we're a very hands-on management team. So between myself and the COO, almost always one of us is down here pushing our engineers, keeping them on track, keeping them on time. Our chief operating officer is 6'5" and weighs 350 pounds, and he brings the ballet moves of the second row into the boardroom. You know, he knows how to get things done. So it's been a tough 3 years, but we're kind of getting there now, you know.
And so the revenues start flowing, presumably, as you in this year as we go forward.
Yeah, we did $4 million in revenues last year, a bit more actually. And, you know, that should grow a lot this year because now we've got all three plants, you know, commercial and producing product. And so they should start to ship over the winter, Southern Hemisphere. And that should bring in substantial amounts of revenue.
And does that automatically grow? Is there momentum in the production processes or do you have a cap at those three plants?
Yes, I would expect our ytterbium plant to be completely sold out. So we believe the plant can do about 1 kilogram a year, and we feel there's probably 2 kilograms of demand. And so we're already trying to work out how we can expand the capacity of that plant. Our carbon-14 plant will operate probably at about 50% capacity, but it's quite a unique, quite a bespoke plant. And it still generates a very good gross margin at that capacity. And our take or pay number for that is $2.5 million a year. And Silicon 28, when we designed the Silicon 28 plant, we designed it to do about 10 kilograms a year. We recognized very quickly we would outsell that 10 kilograms a year. So we increased the capacity and we announced in November it's actually going to be greater than 50 kilograms per year. And based on our initial production runs, it looks like we're going to handsomely exceed that number. There's no way we're selling 50 kilos of Silicon 28 this year. So maybe we'll do some germanium-70 and some xenon-129 in that plant to try and utilize the spare capacity in it. But yeah, as you said, in order to grow from here, we're actually about to start building a lot more laser plants here in South Africa. So we're probably going to try and build five more laser facilities. So things like nickel 64, gadolinium 160, zinc 68, things like that. And then we're looking to build some ASP plants in Iceland, actually, because Iceland benefits from really cheap energy. They green energy as well. And so we'll actually build the plants here in South Africa, and we will ship them to Iceland, plug them together, and start them up there.
When you spoke about laser-driven plants, just explain that.
So we have two processes. The aerodynamic separation process, which is the stationary wall centrifuge we spoke about earlier. And the second is our laser-based approach, quantum enrichment. And that's where we vaporize a metal, pass it through a laser beam, and ionize one of the isotopes and collect those on outside of the mainstream. And that allows exceptionally high levels of enrichment. And it also allows us to enrich isotopes that don't necessarily turn into a gas because there's no gaseous forms of ytterbium. So our ytterbium plant is our first laser plant. That's successfully enriching ytterbium today. And we'd like to build a nickel 64 plant, a zinc 68 plant, gadolinium 160 plant that also uses lasers.
I think it's as we close off here, it's good to just go back and revisit how you got involved in this in the first place, because you're not a scientist, you're a financial scientist, if you like. How did you find the what attracted you to this company that was in business rescue and to see the potential that existed in it?
So I'm actually an engineer. I studied chemical engineering at Cambridge about 35 years ago. Haven't done much chemical engineering, I must say. I joined Morgan Stanley, spent 11 years as a financial analyst at Morgan Stanley in healthcare and chemicals, first in London, then in New York. And I spent about 5 years working at Soros and a number of years working at Highbridge, managing a long short book of equities, always in healthcare and chemicals. And so I've lived healthcare and chemicals all my career, really. As I said earlier, some of the best shorts for those companies that needed isotopes because they couldn't get them and they missed numbers. And you could generally predict when they were going to miss numbers as well, which is always helpful. So this ended up on our chief operating officer's desk, actually, as a debt restructuring opportunity. He did debt restructuring. He did a lot of very high yield and challenging kind of debt refinancings. And he took one look at it and said, I don't even understand what this industry is. Let me ask Paul, he's the only person he might know. He showed it to me and I immediately thought, wow, this could actually solve a lot of the problems I've seen elsewhere in the world. So I initially decided to be an investor in the company. I'd help finance buying it out of business rescue. And I realized pretty quickly, I probably had to be the CEO as well because no one else really understood the industry and we couldn't find anyone else to do it. So I became the CEO as well. So it wasn't on my career plan 6 years ago, but there we go. And it's been an enjoyable journey, tough journey, but it's been enjoyable.
But it seems to be in the CV, if you think about it, with hindsight, because chemical engineer worked in the financial industry at the very top level. That's what they needed. It was a engineering or a scientific process, but they needed capital. And they needed someone to explain and to understand exactly how you can bring the two together. So I guess it was one of those career opportunities that, what does Warren Buffett call it, a fat pitch that comes along once or twice in a lifetime?
That's right. And actually, this isn't the first time and won't be the last time I've hired a group of scientists who couldn't work out how to turn their science into a business. And that, I think, is often the best opportunities for investors to find the good scientists and then capitalize them correctly and turn it into a business.
And staying in South Africa, not taking the IP elsewhere in the world?
So actually our UK entity owns all the IP because our UK entity pays for all the research and the UK is a good place to own IP. We will probably keep our laser facilities here in South Africa. I think it'll be challenging to move those to other countries given the proliferation risk and those kind of concerns. I think ASP plants, I think we'd like to start building them in Iceland to benefit from low energy. So we'd like to build a plant in the United States. That's the country that actually needs it the most. I would have thought the permitting process for that would take forever. So we kind of go where we can get permits easily, quickly. And again, I think about return on capital and speed of that return on capital. And we're pretty happy with what we see in South Africa right now.
Well, we do know that BizNews TV gets into the White House, so if they hear about this, who knows? The way the White House or the American administration's going at the moment, they're seemingly wanting to get everything that they're exposed with in a global sense into the United States as well. So you might get a call from someone. Who knows, Paul? It's a strange world that we live in.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, almost every government classifies isotopes as critical materials. So there is certainly countries now are looking at their domestic supply chains and their global supply chains with a different lens to how they were looking at them 10 years ago.
And when might this listing on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange happen?
Yeah, we haven't set a date. It depends very much upon, you know, going through the regulatory processes of the JSE and that kind of stuff. But I'd like to think, you know, over the Southern Hemisphere winter. Let's see if we can do it by then. You know, it's again, it's out, somewhat out of our control. It depends upon a lot of other factors.
So by the end of this calendar year, would be your target?
Oh, absolutely. If not this Southern Hemisphere winter, so August, July, August, September kind of time frame. Let's see again. You know, it depends. Yeah, ASP also stands for as soon as possible. We do things pretty quick. So again, we're not going to hang around here. When we said we're going to do something, we get on and we generally do it pretty quickly.
And would you be raising capital during that listing?
Yeah, we've got $60 million of cash on our balance sheet already. So we don't really need any capital at this point in time.
Paul Mann is the chief executive of ASP Isotopes. Catching up with him after 2.5 years has been really interesting. Thank you, Paul. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.